pre-recorded, completely unscripted, and about as organised as the thought processes of some members of the Australian Senate. You're listening to news, views and opinions on events from here at home and around the globe on politics, business and society in general. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Welcome back, dear listener. A special budget edition 2016 here, the Iron Fist Velvet Glove. With me, our resident expert on matters financial, the Velvet Glove.
You're putting too much on me now. Goodness me.
Well, you're an accountant? An accountant's
I'm all. An accountant, yes. Yep. Yes, I'm an accountant.
So
yes.
That qualifies you as our resident expert, Scott.
No worries. Well, I'll do my best then, shall I?
So yeah. We had Scott Morrison deliver his budget, and we're waiting with bated breath for Bill Shorten to do his reply tomorrow night. And then shortly after that, Malcolm Turnbull will call an election, and it'll be on for young and old, Scott. So
it will be on for young and old for sure. And you know, last night's budget, yeah, there were bits of it that I didn't like, and there were other bits of it that I did like.
Yep.
So
what were the bits you liked?
The bits I did like was I was actually quite a fan of forget what they call it, the pathway to work or something like that, where they're getting people in to give them traineeships and that sort of stuff.
Right.
You know, I quite liked that.
Yep.
The other thing I quite liked was the absence of any discussion around the National School Chaplaincy Program, which I know we will discuss.
Well, let's do
shortly.
That now. So I watched it with you, and no mention was made of school chaplaincy, and I read all this stuff this morning, no mention was made, and then you sent me a link from The Australian where this lady said that the funding for school chaplaincy had been more or less stopped, and that looks like the end of the school chaplaincy program.
Yeah, I mean, it was called Budget 2016, Chaplains Go as $1.2 billion bonus targets literacy and numeracy. And I thought to myself, thank God for the Tories with their obsession with the three R's. However, you know, it was just reading through that sort of stuff, it all sounded like it was a done deal, that it was finished by 2017 and 18. Then, this afternoon, on Facebook, Queensland Parents for Secular Education, I think it was.
Secular State Schools,
yes. They had a discussion which was linked to a Brisbane Times article, and I apologise, I can't find it at the minute, which suggested that the National School Chaplaincy Program was already funded for the next 2 years, and therefore it didn't need to be appearing in the budget. And hence, that's why they were saying that it was all it didn't need to be discussed.
Yeah, it doesn't.
So there is a little bit of a concern there as to whether or not it's out.
Yeah, the secular world was jumping up and down, ding-dong, the witch is dead, you know, the atheist groups, the secularists, the rationalists, we were all saying, how good's this? And then later in the afternoon, it's like, oh, whoops.
Yeah, so well, here we are. Queensland Parents for Secular State Schools. Looks like reports of the demise of the NSCP were inaccurate. Apparently, the funding for the program was addressed. It wasn't addressed in this budget because it didn't need to be and will be considered in the next year's budget. So funds have been allocated up until 2017-18, but not yet, ?
Yeah. See, I thought the original article was saying that the forecasts for the following years weren't including chaplaincy spending. So who knows where the truth lies? We'll find out by episode 44, probably, dear listener.
Well, we'll find out because there was a fair bit of back and forth over this, ladies and gentlemen, so we're not the only ones that are getting upset by it. You know, we'll have to see where it goes.
So anyway, Scott, so any other good bits that you liked?
No, that was about it, really, on the bits that I liked. And then we go down to the revenue measures, you know, the curtailing of the excesses for superannuation, I thought was timely. the curtailing of the... I had it written down. I had a great big tick next to it.
You're probably thinking of the Google tax.
Well, the Google tax, yes. The Google tax, yes. I did like that. Mm. You know, and also they've gone and they've backed it up too, because you've had in budgets gone by, in years gone by, they've come out and they've said things and then they haven't gone and backed it up. Morrison said last night that they were giving they were going to employ 1,000 people within the ATO to strike a blow for the Google tax, to get it up and running and to make it work. So that, I thought, was quite encouraging.
Might be some good jobs going there, Scott.
Yeah, I don't think so. Okay. Yeah, but no, it was, you know, all in all, though, it was a budget that was designed for an election. There wasn't the fistful of dollars or anything like that. There wasn't the whole let's go and buy our way back into office sort of thing.
No.
It was clearly a budget that was designed with the election in mind. And I did think that there could have been a couple of other things they could have done. They could have at least discussed negative gearing. And I know that the Liberal Party doesn't think it should be attacked at all or anything like that, but surely a discussion around it should have been brought up.
Well, this is one of the key differences in the election coming up, Scott. So they want that difference. So they're prepared to back that they're on a winner with supporting the current negative gearing, and they'll run a scare campaign about the Labor changes. So they want that fight. That's one that they're bunkering down for and willing to have.
Well, yeah, we'll have to see how that goes for them. But, I mean, I feel anyway, and this is just a gut feel because I've got nothing that I can hang my hat on, I feel anyway that they have misjudged the electorate on this. I think that the electorate is in the mood for some changes on negative gearing. They mightn't be prepared to accept the whole, you know, 9-10 yards, whatever you want to call it. And but I do think that there is a feeling in the electorate that it is time to do something about it.
I agree, Scott, because even people who have, you know, your nurses and teachers and policemen who have negatively geared, a lot of them have got kids who might be, you know, in their early 20s or whatever, and those kids are going to be going, how the hell am I going to afford a house? So even those who have benefited from negative gearing might be actually looking at their own children and thinking, gosh, how are they possibly going to afford to buy something? So... yeah, I think you're right. I think the electorate is ready for a change on that. I reckon Labor's probably going to win that argument. But, Scott, I've got a few whinges about this budget. So let me launch into it. He started off, Scott Morrison, like in his opening first sentences, maybe his opening sentence, he said, "These are extraordinary times." Well, no, they're not. Like, in the scheme of things, this is quite ordinary times. Like, what makes this so extraordinary? You know, we're coming off a mining boom, but we've been coming off it now for a couple of years, and we're, you know, looking around for other ways to make money. But there's nothing particularly extraordinary about our current circumstance. So we're not in the middle of a global financial crisis, and I think that's just... wrong to say that. Like, I think we're in pretty average times. A few interesting things happening, but on the whole, it's not extraordinary.
I think I agree with you there. I mean, it is it's not, it's a little less than average. The share market hasn't recovered. The share market is still down in the doldrums, yep. And you know, it's going to take a while before the share market recovers.
But that's just perfectly normal. Like, you go into a financial planning firm and they'll show you a graph and the stock market goes up and down. And
yeah, I know, but it's been down for 5 years now, you know.
Well, and when you look at the graph, it quite often is. Like, that's the whole point. It's nothing.
Yeah, well,
nothing too extraordinary with that. I mean,
no, that's true.
Our GDP is about average. We've got quite low inflation and quite low interest rates. Unemployment's about average. Like, to say it's extraordinary is wrong. But anyway, tax deductions for corporations, we're heading towards 25% for companies to pay tax. And Scott, it's, you know, he didn't actually use the words trickle down, but that's what he was saying, was that, oh, well, we provide these tax incentives, we'll reduce the tax, and then there'll be incentives for business to expand and start new projects. And Scott, with record low interest rates, like, if a company wants to get money to do something, like, what a great time in terms of interest rates. Like, you can access money if you're wanting to do a project. Show me a CEO of any big company who is going, you know what, I'd love to open a new branch, start a new product, expand this area of our business. If only the tax rate was lowered by 2%, then I'd do it. But that tax rate's holding me back. Like, show me one single CEO who would be saying that. It's a nonsense.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, to suggest that they're waiting on the tax to move is nonsensical.
These guys just live on what's the profit, because that means, you know, what's their bonus, and whatever the after-tax effects are, well, they are what they are. Like, the tax is just there. So unless you're, of course, a multinational and you're moving your profits overseas, but for local businesses, to suggest that they're going to go, oh, gee, I won't open that new factory because tax is 2% higher than what I'd like it to be, what a load of rubbish.
Oh, it is rubbish, yeah, it is.
And we need that money to pay for bills. So, so anyway, that was my first gripe, is that's unnecessary. And we've already mentioned, Scott, before that, you know, Australia does not have a big government. When ranked against OECD countries, we're in the lower part of that ranking. So it's not like we are at high levels of government, so compared to other countries. Scott, submarines.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Yeah. That is exactly right.
Have we discussed this? Sorry. Have we discussed the submarines before? Or
no, we haven't. Mm. No, we haven't talked about the submarines before. But
talking to my friend, who's ex Air Force, about the submarine. He's pro submarines, and equipment and stuff. But he said, the way it works in these sorts of things, and you can just imagine it, is, imagine the Defence Department really wanted 6 submarines. What they do is they ask for 12 and hope they get given 6. Why? and if they only get 3, well, they'll probably live with it. Like, that's how these things work. It's like Life of Brian and haggling. Like, you don't start with your true position. And I'd be quietly confident, Scott, that they wanted 6 submarines. They asked for 12 and got the shock of their lives when the answer came back from Tony Abbott saying, yeah, you can have 12. Like, they would have gone, oh, gosh. So, like, there's a defence white paper, Scott. It's 180 pages outlining Australia's position and policies on defence. And there's 8 paragraphs dealing with submarines, and those paragraphs say nothing of any consequence or detail as to why we need 12. Like, here's my view, is we should have 3. Like, sure, we can need a submarine, but if China or someone like that is thinking of invading Australia and gets together a convoy of naval vessels and heads our way, you know, having 12 submarines, the idea is it's a deterrent, that they think, geez, we better not go because we might get sunk on the way. And with three of them lurking around, the deterrent's still the same. So I just think 12 is, you know, I think if you're going to spend that sort of money, then they need to justify tactically why you need 12. What sort of attack are you anticipating? Why would three be not enough? And why would you need 12? And a real justification, like, it's an enormous amount of money to spend on just a gut feel of, oh, 12 seems like the right number.
Yeah, and that is exactly right. I mean, you know, if we go to that Drum article from the ABC in February, just as the white paper was being put to bed, it was reported that RAN submariners will be given annual lump sum payments of up to $50,000 and other inducements just for staying on board.
Mm.
Now, you know, if you've got problems filling the bloody things anyway,
yep,
it then becomes even worse if you're then going to try and fill new ones.
Yep.
You know, it seems to me ridiculous.
There's a certain type of person who'd be prepared to, you know, live underwater for months on end and away from home. And, you know, we're not a big country, and finding enough people to fill 12 submarines would be enormously expensive and progressively harder and harder to fill those submarines the more you have. So we're having, dear listener, a bit of an internal discussion within the Secular Party about our policy towards submarines. And one member was saying that, you know, there's economies of scale in having more submarines. But I would argue that they don't apply in terms of manning a submarine. That it actually gets more and more difficult to find guys or girls willing to do it. So yeah, not happy about submarines, Scott. I reckon our best defence would be a better educated public and spending the money on Gonski rather than submarines.
Well, either that or a better sophisticated air force, maybe.
Yeah,
or a
missile system. Like, surely you can
launch
a missile from somewhere, and like all sorts of possibilities for other things. So Scott, the other thing. Go ahead.
You can spend an awful lot of money for $50 billion.
You can.
And you can buy an awful lot of missiles,
yep,
an awful lot of aircraft and that sort of stuff with that money.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Scott, $1.2 billion for education rather than the $4.5 billion that's required for Gonski.
But that 1.2 was over and above their initial offer of zero.
Yeah. See, that's how the game's played. You see, we're not going to give you anything. Oh, okay, we'll give you 1.2. You know,
yeah.
You know, you want 12 submarines? We'll give you 6. You know,
like, exactly.
Tony Abbott just didn't understand that bit. But I think it was Abbott. It must have been Abbott who made the decision. Is it right? Abbott.
Abbott was prime minister at the time when they started the whole acquisition thing.
When they made the commitment, they must have 12. Yeah. I think. And then it went into tender process. So, yeah. So I can blame Abbott for that. But
yes, you can.
Back to education. Like, the Commonwealth is just more and more wanting to stick its fingers into how education money is spent, Scott. And they're talking about putting sort of strings attached to the funding. Some of the strings are that teachers must be paid based on performance rather than time served, and also looking at requiring schools to perform against certain measures of literacy and numeracy, etc. And that, to me, Scott, smacks of that sort of neoliberalism that we've been talking about, where everything's competitive and judged against each other, and some things you just can't do that. It's not a clean market. I mean, the way teachers in Queensland at least currently work is that the longer you stay, you are salary is increased incrementally unless the principal says that you have failed to perform in a certain way, and then that can go to appeal, obviously. So I just think if you are going to start doing performance-based testing of teachers, then it's the ones who tick the boxes and fill in the forms and work towards a criteria who are the ones who benefit, and the ones who just want to get in there and teach properly and do the job properly without all of the form filling and box ticking would suffer in comparison. So it's not an, you know, poor performers, principals can deny their pay rise, but it's just not a job, I think, Scott, and you might disagree with me on this, we haven't discussed it, I don't think it's one that you can accurately measure performance in an objective way.
It is difficult. I've got a couple of siblings that are teachers, and an ex too that was also a teacher, and they all said exactly that, that it's not the sort of job that you can fill out a form and have a performance review and that sort of stuff. I had been used to performance reviews all my life, you know, just sitting down every 12 months, talking to your boss about, you know, how's things going and that sort of stuff, and then moving on and getting a pay rise.
Yes.
Whereas the teachers were, they were looking at that as foreign. And, so I'm not entirely convinced of the... I'm not entirely convinced that it would work. I understand where the government is coming from in this one, though. I mean, I do understand that they're trying to, what's the word I'm looking for? They're trying to get something that they've got a measure that they can look at.
Yes.
You know? So I can understand where they're headed, but it's not going to work.
Here's a little test you can apply to most things, Scott, and it'll help you decide whether you're comfortable with them or not, okay? What would James Patterson think of this?
I imagine James Patterson is probably very much behind
in the Institute
this,
of Public Affairs. They'd be saying, that's a fantastic idea. Rah, rah, here, here, more, more. And that, dear listener, is a sure sign that you want to avoid that. So apply that test to, and 99% of the time, it'll help you make a decision as to how you feel about something.
Sorry, go on.
No, I'm just trying to think. That was the main things, I think.
I forgot to mention the move towards 25% company tax. I did neglect to mention that when it was coming in, and that is wrong.
Yep.
The other thing that's also wrong is, you know... I know a lot of our listeners will probably throw rocks at me for saying this, but $80,000 to $87,000 is what the tax cut is.
Mm.
You know, it's not huge amounts of money anyway. But you know, why can you? I find myself falling very much on Labor's side here. In that, how can you give a tax cut to those people and then nothing to anyone else? You know, it struck me as unfair, and also it strikes me as a little bit peculiar that you would bother doing anything like that.
Mm.
You know, it ends up being about $315 a year, you know, which is not a hell of a lot of cash anyway.
They might as well have left it. And the same with that special levy on very high income earners, which they have now removed, which is now effectively a tax cut.
Well,
and
yeah,
could have left
they
that
have. They, well, what they've done there is that they haven't legislated to make it permanent.
Yes,
it was legislated to end next financial year, I believe.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, so it's always had that sunset clause on it,
right.
And then they haven't repealed that sunset clause.
Right. So there we go. So anyway, you know, when Tony Abbott came to power all those years ago, you know, it was to fix a budget emergency crisis, and in terms of, you know, deficits and spending, etc., not a lot's changed since then, so...
No, it hasn't actually changed, and I thought there was a... I saw an infographic somewhere that showed the percentage of GDP that was being expended.
I'll give it to you. I've got it, Scott. So yep. When Abbott came into power, it was spending was 25.6% of GDP, and yep. Now, after 3 years of Conservative government, it's 25.8. So
yeah, so it has actually gone up.
It's going to be very interesting to see how the different sides sell. There's a difference between this. There's going to be a big difference between the two parties this time, I reckon. You know, the last few elections, you know, when Rudd got into power over Howard, he was basically saying, "Look, I'm just John Howard, but you're sick of him, so vote for me." Like,
exactly,
And Abbott got in by saying, "You know, there'll be no new taxes. I won't, you know." He was more or less pitching himself very similar as well, just saying, I'm not them. So I think this time there's a bit more of a different ideology between the two is going to come through.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, it is going to be a very interesting election campaign.
Okay, so that's budget. Different links on the website, dear listener. I quite like these infographics, Scott. Like, they give you a little...
Yeah, the conversation went to town with them this time, didn't they?
So they had an infographic on our economy, and then they had an infographic on the budget at a glance, where you see pie charts and graphs. And, you know, because this is the thing, when people talk about billions, you know, this and that has increased by X number of billions, it means absolutely nothing unless you can see it in comparison to what it used to be and historically and as a percentage of other things. Like, these numbers are so big, you've got to see them relative to things, Scott. Kind of makes sense, don't you?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, there's no point there's no point just saying the word billions, because billions they're the new millions, and it just gets out of control.
Yeah.
So you gotta have something to compare it to.
Yeah. So anyway, so there's some links there on some infographics which are good, and so they're there. We've discussed the education one. I think we can move through that. The Iron Fist, the Velvet Glove, and the 12th Man are all members of the Secular Party. There may be other contributors to the show who are also members. That does not mean that every opinion given on this show is policy of the Secular Party. To find out what is policy, go to the website of the Secular Party. And while you're there, think about joining and signing up, because we need more secularists in this world. Thanks. Scott, I had a meeting today with Kevin Bates from Queensland Teachers Union.
Oh, really?
So
how'd that go?
Not too bad. And I'm not exactly sure. I can't say too much because I forget exactly how much was sort of off the record, on the record kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he kind of gave me the impression that we might have some success with religious instruction towards the end of the year. Just in different people
right?
that he knows. So more about that at another time. But yeah, there's a faint light on the horizon on that topic of religious instruction classes.
That is very good news. Mm. Yes, even if we're stuck with the National School Chaplaincy Program, if we can get rid of RI, that'd be great. Mm.
Scott, in Queensland, the Queensland Parliament is considering creating a Bill of Rights. Did you know this?
I didn't know this until you actually sent this through to me, yeah.
Scott, what?
And I read it, and I don't know where I sit now. I mean, I had always been very much opposed to a Bill of Rights, certainly a constitutional Bill of Rights I'm opposed to, but, you know, if we had a legislative Bill of Rights, I'd be happier with that. But it's really, reading both articles, I don't know where I stand anymore.
Well, one of them's by Bill O'Chee, which I assume is the former senator, Bill O'Chee.
He's a former National Party senator,
yeah.
yes.
And he's not the most eloquent of writers, and if you're at all hesitating about a Bill of Rights, Scott, go back to former New South Wales Premier Carr wrote an excellent reason why we don't need a Bill of Rights. And it's one of my hobby horses, dear listener. And anyway, two articles opposing views on a Bill of Rights in Queensland. But here's my point, is that the second article is by
Amy McVeigh.
Amy McVeigh, coordinator of the Campaign for Human Rights Act for Queensland. And she says that submissions to the current Human Rights Inquiry closed last week. This is written on the 27th of April. Scott, like, we're doing our best to keep up with politics and events at home and around the globe.
And I had no idea that this was even going on.
Exactly. Like, what, like, this, if I had seen something, my ears would have pricked because it is one of my hobby horses and I would have been right onto it. But I have not heard of any human rights inquiry in Queensland. And I've been studying the news fairly assiduously for the last 12 months. And so there you go. Like, these things are happening and we're not even aware of them, Scott. And we're trying real hard. Well, how does the average person have any idea?
Well, it's always mystified me how anyone finds out what the hell's going on, because you'd have to be going through the Gazette to find these sorts of things out.
Yeah, you're not going to find them in the regular media, apparently.
So, no, apparently not. No.
So anyway, you know, my view briefly is, you have this conflict when the thing is, when you create a Bill of Rights, there's a massive list of rights that people supposedly then have, which then come into conflict. And I just say, if there's some wrong that needs to be righted, then just pass the legislation. There's just nothing that I can think of that you couldn't fix without just a simple act of Parliament. So I think they cause more trouble than they're worth, a Bill of Rights. But an in-depth discussion another day on that, Scott. I just wanted to sort of point it out as the main point being, bloody hell, didn't even know there was an inquiry.
Yeah, exactly. And it is something that we probably would have contributed to if you'd known it was on.
A little bit on American politics, Scott. Former Speaker of the House, John Boehner, was extremely blunt when asked for his opinion on Ted Cruz. And his response was, Lucifer in the flesh. I have Democrat friends and Republican friends. I get along with almost everyone. But I've never worked with a more miserable son of a bitch in my life.
Yeah, it was fairly blunt and to the point, wasn't it?
It was.
You know, he goes on further to say, Cruz's failure of reason, compassion, decency and humanity are products of his Christian pandering, if not an actual Christian faith. Mm. It grows tedious when paedophile priests and loathsome politicians are conveniently dismissed as satanic, even as they spew biblical verse and prostrate themselves before the cross, recruiting Christian faithful. Satanists will have nothing to do with any of it.
Yes, so that was the Satanists saying, hang on a minute, you can't call Cruz Lucifer in the flesh. Satan's not that bad. Wow, I really like the Satanic Temple. I think I'm half tempted to just... Nobody's contacted us to say they're going to start a local chapter of the Satanic Temple, but, you know, dear listener, if you're out there and you're half inclined, please do it, because I think they could cause some mischief. And, Scott, while we're still on American politics, so, first of all, Cruz has just pulled out of the race, apparently, because he lost that... most recent...
He lost Indiana.
So he's gone, so it looks like just Trump. which is a good thing, because had it possibly still been Cruz, he would be more of a disaster than Trump. So that's good news.
Cruz was even worse than Trump. I don't think there's any argument there. But, I mean, Donald Trump, he's an idiot and he's a fool. Mm. But he's also, he's got that rare combination of being able to turn off his own electorate. You've got Republicans that are being interviewed by Australian media who are, they're not in any way wishy-washy Republicans. They are dyed-in-the-wool Republicans who have said they just won't vote.
Yes.
So, you know, look, he'll win the nomination for the Republican Party, but Hillary's got it in the bag then.
Hasn't she? You would think.
Yeah. Or Bernie Sanders, whoever ends up running. But
Something quite extraordinary, you would think, for her to lose.
Oh, absolutely. It really would be quite extraordinary for the Democrats to lose. Yeah.
But anyway, got an article here. A PolitiFact scorecard. So there's this group who look at what politicians say and then check the facts about whether they're true or not. And then they look at all the things they say and they basically rate their statements on six different levels. So they've got true, mostly true, half true, mostly false, and the final one I like is so false that it's pants on fire. I like these groups have got a little sense of humour in what they're doing. You can have fun when you're doing things still, can't you? So anyway,
you can.
So they've looked at Donald Trump and the things he said in the politicking that they're doing, and they fact check them, and they can give a percentage of what he says, and the result is, as of the 29th of April, the percentages of what he says: true is 2%, mostly true 7%, half true is 16%. Then we get to mostly false 15%, just plain false 43%, and pants on fire 18%. Oh, goodness me.
Yeah, so, I mean, it says that, you know, he's only honest 9% of the time.
Yeah, and everybody knows this, and he's still...
He's
going to be the Republican
leading
nominee.
Yeah, exactly. And you compare that to Clinton and Sanders, where they've got them down there further towards. Clinton, honest 49%, dishonest 29%. Sanders, honest 51%, dishonest 31%. And John Kasich, who's the other Republican nominee, well, the other Republican contender,
yes,
honest 53% of the time, dishonest 33% of the time.
Yes.
You know, it's...
Yep. And Cruz is in there as well, and he's, we've got 35% of the time was in the true sector, and the remaining 65% was in the false sector. So it'd be great if there was a... it'd be great if it was in Australia, but it would be terrible if we... Do we need it? Do we need such a truth meter on our politicians here, Scott?
It's something that would be useful.
Mm.
But, I mean, I don't know how they'd go with measuring the budget right now, because a lot of that is set out into the future.
Yeah.
So it would be very difficult to measure that. But, you know, I think it would be useful, yeah.
All right, Scott, it's time for the quiz.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yep, quiz. You might have seen this in the media, this one. Essential Report. Two-party preferred, Scott. Liberal, National, and Labor. What would be the current voting intention?
The Liberal Nationals is 49%, Labor is 51%.
Yeah, the one I've got here is 48 Liberal National and 52 to Labor. So
okay,
that's interesting. They could pull this off, Scott. You still going for?
No, you keep saying that. I'm still backing the coalition to win.
Right.
Yes. I haven't decided what I'm doing with my preferences yet.
Scott, let's have a six-pack on this. I'm going for Labor.
You're going for Labor?
I'm willing to put up a six-pack.
I'll go a six-pack for the Coalition.
Righto. Okay, we'll see what happens.
No worries.
Okay, submarines, Scott.
Yes.
This week the government announced that the $50 billion contract for building Australia's future submarines has been awarded to a French company, with most of the construction to be done in South Australia. Do you approve or disapprove of this decision?
Approves probably 45% of the vote. Mm-hmm. Disapproves probably 30% of the vote, and the balance would be don't know.
You got your finger on the pulse there, Scott. 52% approve and 27% disapprove.
Yeah.
I'd love to just get those people into a room and provide them with some ideas and facts and arguments and outside of the Murdoch press and see what response we get.
Well, even if you just use the Murdoch press, because they've got a liberal who's, you know, a nameless liberal that's actually been quoted as saying that this is the most expensive work for the Dole scheme that they've ever had.
$1 million a job, something like that. Okay. Do you approve or disapprove of changing negative gearing so that for future purchases, investors can only claim tax deductions for investments in newly built homes? So that's the Labor policy.
I'm going to be guessing here, but I would imagine that approval's probably 40%. Disapproves probably 35-40%, and the balance being undecided.
Very good again. So total approved 36, disapproved 38, don't know is 26. So evenly divided.
Well, that's not too bad.
And let me just see this one. What do you think would be the impact on house prices of limiting negative gearing? And I'll just read this one out. 24% say house prices would fall. 31 think that house prices would continue to rise, but at a slower rate. And 13% would say that nothing would change and they're going to continue to rise at the same rate, with 31% saying don't know.
So. I fit in with that group that say that house prices will continue to rise, but they'll continue to rise at a lower rate.
Yeah, that would be them. That's the 31%ers, along with the don't knows of 31. So, and then there's some sort of attributes of the leaders, and Bill Shorten's attribute as a capable leader has jumped a lot since the last time they did the poll in March, and Malcolm Turnbull's attribute as a capable leader has dropped a lot. So sentiment on both of those is changing rapidly, Scott, and I'm looking forward to my six-pack in July.
Well, the last time I bet on a federal election outcome, we had Tony Abbott elected.
Right.
So,
and did you win that one?
So I don't have I lost that one. Yeah, just
good. Oh, okay. A couple of religious things. An article titled "The Social Cost of Religious Freedom."
Yeah, that was very interesting, wasn't it?
And this was written by Chris Fotinopoulos, an ethicist and philosophy teacher at an Anglican school. And he makes the point, talking about discrimination where schools can refuse to employ people based on their religion, he says that most don't do that. But he does go on to say...
Then they shouldn't have a problem then with the secular party policy on it, then,
yeah,
should they?
Yeah, that's true. So he also says, if any organisation understands the importance of boundaries, it is the church. conservative religious figures are particularly quick to point to the boundary that distinguishes church from state when it comes to defending the right of the church to conduct its affairs in accordance with the tenets of its faith, yet are miraculously blind to the same boundary when it comes to the delivery of secular programs in state schools. More to the point, right-wing religious activists defend the right of the church to conduct its affairs no matter how offensive it is to others, yet see it as their God-given right to interfere and indeed thwart worthy secular education programs. So I thought that was a guy in an Anglican school. He was on side with our thoughts.
Yeah, he was. He was on side with our thoughts. You know, he was bang on the money. There's not really much he can say about it other than...
Good on you.
Yeah, good on you, exactly.
In our favourite secular state of Australia, Victoria, Scott, they have passed those laws to stop people hanging around abortion clinics hassling would-be clients. Yeah. And the law has come into effect, and a bit of an article where this guy turned up still and started reading from the Bible and trying to hand out pamphlets, and the police came along and said, you can't be within 150 metres of this place on your bike, and he had to go. How good's that?
Yeah, it was very good, and it was Sex Party MP Fiona Patton last year made it illegal. She was the one who introduced the bill.
Hmm.
And the bill has made it illegal to protest within 150 metres of the establishments. It really was very long overdue. You know, for the first time in 25 years, the group of anti-abortion protesters who have picketed the Wellington Parade abortion clinic 6 days a week were absent, and women were able to enter the building without being forced to run the gauntlet. Mm. And you know what? That is exactly the way that you should be able to obtain a perfectly legal and perfectly reasonable service. Mm. You know, you shouldn't be having to run gauntlets of people and go into it. I thought it was very good. You know, it's 25 years overdue, but it is better late than never.
Yep. You know, if only Queensland could pass some laws so we could have some proper abortion clinics, and then we could pass laws to stop people picketing outside them. You know, like we exactly. can't even get to first base.
Well, you know, we can, and it's frustrating as hell for those of us who are outside of Parliament to sit there and watch it happen. Mm. You know, it's ridiculous.
The name of the group who are doing the picketing in Victoria, this religious group, are called Helpers of God's Precious Infants, is their names. And in a statement, the Helpers of God's Precious Infants said its members were peaceful and that the new law imposed draconian fines and possible jail for merely being present or offering a pamphlet to those who wish to receive it. It must be the first law of its kind in Victoria to criminalise peaceful activities, the group's spokeswoman said. Oh well, tough luck. You're out of luck.
Well, it is tough luck, and you know they're just going to have to suck it, you know, because it's wrong what they have been doing for 25 years. They've been called to account, and a stop's been put to it. So I think it's great.
And still on the magnificent state of Victoria, Scott, they apparently had a parliamentary report for assisted dying laws, and they're going to consider that. And it's been a 10-month inquiry, and would not be surprised to see them lead our other states once again.
It really wouldn't surprise me either. Premier Andrews, who last year conceded there is perhaps more public support for this change than there has ever been, but so far has stopped short of backing voluntary euthanasia or any other dying with dignity reforms. I don't understand why he... Well, I mean, he is a Christian, so I suppose I understand where his objection to euthanasia comes from. But, you know, it's... At the end of the day, we've had this inquiry now that's been going for 10 months. And, you know, there was talk... I've just got to find this where it was... Here we go. However, it is likely the committee will end up being split in its views, potentially resulting in some MPs lodging a separate minority report that rejects the notion of voluntary euthanasia, which involves ending another person's life to relieve their suffering. You know, now, if that's the case, well, you know, it's probably going to be the coalition that would come out and be opposed to it. And it would be Labor that would be in favour of it. So I think that,
and it'll be religious. It'll be religious elements in the conservative ranks, Scott, for sure.
Oh, of course there will be. Yeah, for sure it will be religious elements within the conservative ranks, for sure. You know, I don't understand why it's. I don't understand the objection to voluntary euthanasia. I never have, and I don't think I ever will understand it.
Well, here's something to help you understand it. This other article we've linked to from the Mercury, where this guy is talking about it.
Yes, yes.
He says,
yeah.
Most religious groups and churches oppose same-sex marriage, for example, despite overwhelming support in the community. They oppose the right of people to control their own destiny. Religion believes suffering on earth is somehow good for the soul. Religion in Australia, in the form of the powerful groups like the Catholic Church and Australian Christian Lobby, bully politicians into rejecting the community's yearning for the right to die peacefully. They pose intellectually dishonest arguments about slippery slopes. It goes like this. If you let Tasmanians control when they die, in cases where they have incurable illnesses and the suffering is too much to bear, then every elder Tasmanian will have evil doctors and family members lurking around the corner waiting to knock them off. Nursing homes will become unsafe and life-threatening. It's a sickening approach to the issue and an insult to our society. In jurisdictions that allow the right to die, there's simply no evidence of any slippery slope emerging. And that's exactly the argument that they'll run and are running.
Yeah, of course they'll run that argument for sure. And, you know, they will look ridiculous for doing it, but they'll give it their shot. You know, for sure.
Scott, if only in Queensland we were actually having these discussions. Like, we've got this Labor government that's just sitting on their hands doing nothing. So.
Well, they certainly appear to be sitting on their hands doing nothing, and it makes you wonder why the hell they are. I mean, they haven't got an upper house to have to worry about or anything else. They could easily get away with it.
Yeah. So it's just frustrating that we have to keep referring to other states. But anyway, that's good for Victoria. So
it is good for Victoria, and I hope they proceed with having dying with dignity laws too.
Well, dear listener, with a bit of luck, Scott has managed to record this on his now U-Bute microphone. So hopefully you'll have noticed the quality. Scott tried to do this last week and it didn't work, and we had to revert to his backup plan. But I'm feeling confident that this week we've got it. So hopefully his voice came through loud and clear. And Scott, I reckon we can wrap up episode 43, and I'll say farewell from the Iron Fist, and I'll talk to you next week.
And say farewell from the Velvet Glove, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.
Well, dear listener, did you enjoy that episode of the podcast? If you did, I've got a favour to ask. First up, tell some friends. Let them know about the podcast. You'll be discussing something at some time, and you might be repeating something I've said. And when you're talking to your friends, say, hey, I heard this on this podcast and it's worth listening to. And maybe pick an episode that you think's a good one and direct them to it. Like, grab their phone and go to their podcast app and search for Iron Fist Velvet Glove and subscribe on their behalf on their phone. And just put the word out. The other thing is you could become a patron and support the show. So if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Patreon, and there are some different options for subscribing and paying per episode. And really, the amount that you pay depends on what you get from the podcast. So there's different levels ranging from $1.50 Australian to, I think, $10 and various ones in between. It's really, what do you think it's worth? Is it worth a cup of coffee? Is it worth more than that, less than that, whatever you get out of it, because not everybody gets the same. Maybe you don't listen to the whole thing. Maybe you never talk about it with people. Maybe you really couldn't care less half the time whether the podcast is there. It just, it'll be different for everybody. So if you get a lot out of the podcast, contribute a bit more. If you don't get much, contribute less. But in any event, you can subscribe there. If you don't like the idea of a regular subscription, the website has a link to a PayPal donation, so you could just do a one-off donation every now and again. So there you go. It'd be good to spread the word, get a few more listeners, and that way, look, if we ended up getting more listeners and more money, we could do maybe a second episode or more special episodes, provide some more content. So it's up to you. If you think it's worthwhile, let people know. Thanks.